And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Talk radio for the thinking person, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
No, I'm not going to talk about it. I refuse to talk about it. I am gagging from it. When teachers used to do this in high school, I would go to sleep. I would start cutting a desk open with a compass. I would scar my hands when I heard about politics in high school. I couldn't listen to a word about the American political system. It was the most obtuse, boring system created by mankind, and it was created only to screw the public. Welcome to the Savage Nation. The rules have been established specifically to make sure that the most evil people on earth get to run the country without any threat from the people themselves, while bamboozling the people into thinking that they have freedom. And they have a choice. So I'm not going to talk about it. Please don't call me about it. If you want to read my opinion, go to michaelsavage.com. You'll see the article that it's the sine qua non of the entire thing. Michael Savage to Cruz renounced Colorado result. But if you call on it, you're not getting on the show, because I did it yesterday. Very impassioned 3 hours, and that's enough for me. Period. End of story. So here are the stories that attracted my attention today. It started with religion. And I was going to ask you, does your religion help you in everyday life and how? Now, how did I get there? I am not a particularly religious person. I'm extremely fearful of God. Let me put it to you that way. I mean, I don't know how else to put it. I mean, I don't know if you believe what I just said to you. You know, like, I hedge my bets that that there's a God up there. He created us, and he's watching us. And I'm hedging my bets. I try to do more good than harm, because I have to pay for it in the end. So I'm hedging that there's a God, and we get judge. So I watch my step, in other words. I'm not inherently good or evil, although I never was the type that hurt animals. I figure I'm good. I'm never the type that kicked dogs or set cats on fire, although I knew kids who did. They all became lawyers or surgeons, one or the other. I never had those impulses. So I started the day by speaking to somebody I know, and I said to them, do you know that the Jewish prayer book opens with a prayer in the morning, a morning prayer, in which the morning prayer there is a statement, there's a whole sequence, and it says, blessed are you, Lord our God, King of the universe, who has not made me a woman. He said, that is not true, you made that up. I said, no, it's not misogynistic, but the men say that every morning. Now, I know if the feminists hear this, it's going to cause a lot of problems. They're going to want to burn the Jewish prayer book. They have nothing to say about the Quran, where women are actually turned into slaves, where terrorism is actually encouraged in this whole second half of the Holy Bible that they use. Yeah, read about it. For those of you who actually don't know what you're talking about, their religious edicts tell them to conduct jihad against the entire world. But nevertheless, going back to the prayer book that the Jewish people use, especially Orthodox Jewish people, those, in other words, who may sound like Bernie Sanders but don't act like him, think of Bernie Sanders with a beard and long sideburns, someone who actually believes in God instead of himself and his own madness. So in the morning, Jews get up in the morning, and they offer thanks to God for restoring their soul within them. And they say, God, thank you for giving us your commandments and commanding us concerning the washing of the hands. So they wash their hands. That's a good idea. Most people don't know what heathens they are by not washing frequently. They think that they're not necessary, but hygiene is the key to health, by the way. In all of my studies, in all of my years of studying health, do you know that hygiene is one of the number one issues in distinguishing between long life and health and anything else? Meaning hygiene, hygiene, hygiene. So having said that, first thing the Jews do is wash their hands. I want you to hear the second part of the morning blessing, and then I'm going to get into politics. Believe me, everything is political. So just bear with me. If you'd rather hear about delegates and schmelegates, please, you're tuning into the wrong show. Turn into someone who knows nothing else except delegates and can read you chapter and verse about delegates. I'm not interested in delegates. I'm interested in God right now. So the second thing that Jews read, Orthodox Jews, is this. Blessed are you, Lord our God, King of the universe, who has formed man in wisdom and created within him numerous orifices and cavities. It is revealed in them before the throne of your glory that if but one of them were to be blocked or one of them were to be opened, it would be impossible to exist even for a short while. Blessed are you, Lord, who heals all flesh and performs wonders. Now, this shows you that in the ancient days, the Jewish people were aware of anatomy. While others were swinging in trees and behaving like subhumans, the Jewish people were already aware of anatomy before anatomy was even known to the rest of the human race. And they realized that they had vessels and arteries, veins, etc., orifices and cavities. If one of them were to be blocked or one of them were to be open, it would be impossible to exist even for a short while. So when an Orthodox Jew reads this in the morning, what is he saying? He becomes super conscious of the fact that his life is temporal, it's transient, and that he owes his life to God. Do you understand what that prayer is? So then you read on. I'm not going to read any more of it. You read it for yourself. And King of the Universe opens the eyes of the blind, releases the bound, straightens the bowed, clothes the naked, gives strength to the weary, directs the steps of man, blah, blah, blah. And then you get to, blessed are you, Lord our God, King of the Universe, who has not made me a woman. So why would an Orthodox Jewish man thank God for not making him a woman? I don't know. You'll have to ask them. Don't ask me. But it's in the prayer book. So you can say, well, that's horrible. They should burn that out. I don't know. Talk to them about it. So that was one thing I was going to talk about. I was going to ask you the key question about religion, which was, does religion help you in everyday life and how? I thought it's a great question. But then I got interested in other topics, including should MMA be banned? And that's because someone died in the ring in Ireland. I was watching it. And many of us think we're very tough because we watch fights. But that's why fights are popular, because people watch them and they imagine themselves tougher than the guy in the ring. But if any one of us who was not a fighter went in a ring with a boxer, you'd be killed with one punch. You went into a ring with an MMA fighter, they kill you with one serpentine blow. They kill you with one punch. And that's why we're fascinated by fighting. Every ancient culture had traditions and contests to see who the alpha male was. It's inherent in the animal kingdom. But humans were the ones to turn it into a contest for entertainment. I don't know of any animals who do it for entertainment. If we watch elk smashing their antlers into each other, it's to drive the other guy out of the little territory so he can have the women elk. And she may not look hot to you, but man, when you're walking around on the tundra with them antlers, and there's a couple of them female elk around, they look hot to you, let me tell you that. So you got to drive the other elk off the territory. The poor guy, I don't know where he goes, to Brooklyn or something, and he opens a deli, whatever. He's never seen again in that territory when they bang into each other. But in the human race, we turned it into a contest for entertainment. In the ancient Roman arena, it was a battle basically to torture people to death for the entertainment of the vermin, the pigs who drank wine and sat up there in the arena and watched it. But for much of the 20th century, boxing was the popular blood sport that people would enjoy. Two men standing toe-to-toe, in the beginning no gloves, punching each other to see if one could kill the other one or knock him out. And the early days of boxing, there were no rounds. There was no limit to the rounds. They fight till one of them lost. Did you know that? Fights would go on for hours. Then eventually rules were enacted. The rules, I think the Marquess of Queensbury, I don't know what the rules were. I'm not an expert on it. But you know the rules of boxing. No hitting below the belt. No rabbit punches to the back of the head. No metal allowed in the gloves. They even regulate the gloves. And it's a highly regulated sport, boxing. And rarely do you have that kind of injury anymore. There were, in the early days, cases of men being killed in the ring. I remember one as a kid watching on the TV with the Gillette blue blades. Who remembers the fight? I don't remember the fighter, but he knocked someone out and killed him. A stretcher job. And it was not something pretty to watch. You know what I'm saying? Now we come to mixed martial arts. It's a practice that developed in secret back rooms in hidden fight clubs because boxing wasn't enough. People wanted more blood. They wanted more blood. And so rules became secondary to the violence that could be perpetrated, right? And MMA became a huge sport, and its heroes were glamorized. And now today a fighter is dead from that brutality. I linked it up. It's pretty awful to watch. He doesn't die in the ring, but he dies a few days later. He got knocked out in Ireland. MMA fighter punched to death in cage from the AP. He was fighting one of the maniac Irish fighters. They're still some of the toughest people on earth. The crazy Irishman, forget about it. You don't want to get an Irishman mad. Even in this mild age, let me tell you that. As he's fighting an Argentinian, and he bang, bang, bang. I think the ref should have jumped in earlier between me and you. And he let him pound him on the ground. He died a few days later. So I'm saying to myself, wait a minute. Have we gone too far? Is this what we need to be entertained by? Or shouldn't we talk about banning the mixed martial arts? And then it leads to other things like politics. You're witnessing a blood sport right now in the political arena. The GOP, the Republican Party, right now is engaged in an MMA fight with, for example, Donald Trump and all the other candidates ripping each other to shreds. You're being targeted by this blood sport, and you think that it's something beautiful to watch. But the fact of the matter is, it's not beautiful to watch. What's going on in the Republican side of things is the equivalent of the MMA, and while it's highly entertaining, it will lead to the death of the Republican Party, probably already has, as far as I'm concerned. We're watching the vermin who run the Republican Party, the behind-the-soon boiler room guys, the same type who have flooded America with illegal aliens for cheap labor. They're now flooding America with cheap politicians and denying we, the American people, any candidate that we may select through a popular vote. They do not want that. And so you're watching the death of the Republican Party because it's become nothing but a front group for cheap labor. And that's somewhat related to the MMA, in other words, in the blood sport they were watching. Now, you could argue that on the other side of things, Sanders versus Hillary is sort of an MMA blood sport. It is not. It's a fake fight. That's a food fight compared to what's gone on the Republican side. That's another topic that I did want to talk about. I guess if you want to chime in on the MMA, go ahead. You can. And then I was going to talk a lot about Pope Francis's message and his beautiful statements about man and woman. He didn't write them, of course. He's only interested in the left-wing political stuff. But whoever wrote that encyclical and included the thing on women and men, especially marriages that are mature, is so beautiful. It's one of the nicest things I've ever read about the beauty of marriage, I got to tell you. And then I was going to talk about road rage and how eating rare steak could give you road rage. And I'm going to warn you against eating steak tartare, which has become far too popular in America right now, because there are parasites in uncooked meat or rare-cooked meat called Toxoplasmosis gondii. Well, a toxoplasmosis, to be specific, is the name of the disease. The organism is known as Toxoplasma gondii, and it infects your brain. And it can cause schizophrenia, it can cause mental illness, it can even cause road rage. Those are some of the topics that have attracted my attention on the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I trust to protect my wealth and financial future. Call 1-800-289-2640. All right, so we're talking about everything from God to steak tartare on the Savage Nation, which I love. I'm so back to being me and doing what I like best, which is having a variety of topics. If anyone says the word delegate, you'll be banned from the show for the rest of your life. I am so not interested in delegates. I'm not interested in the political backroom game playing that has destroyed America and turned this into a laughing stock of the world. So let's talk about the other things, okay? Please. Please, let's do that. And the topics are beautifully interesting. And I'm going to read Francis's encyclical on man and woman. It's so well, I can't squeeze it in. I have 2 minutes and 40 seconds now till the next break. Our reflection on growing conjugal love from Amoris Laetitia. Laetitia, right. Our reflection on St. Paul's hymn to love has prepared us to discuss conjugal love. This is the love between husband and wife. A love sanctified, enriched, and illuminated by the grace of the sacrament of marriage. You hear how beautiful this is? It is an affective union, spiritual and sacrificial, which combines the warmth of friendship and erotic passion and endures long after emotions and passions subside. Pius XI taught that this love permeates the duties of married life and enjoys pride of place. infused by the Holy Spirit. He goes on. And I have to tell you that I don't hear enough of this in our society, which is, what can I say to you, so cynical that there's no love left in it. The Zuckerberg, the Spielbergs, the Katzenbergs have squeezed love out of our society. They've replaced sex for love. When do you ever see love in the movies? When do you ever see a movie that shows the enduring love between a man and a woman as something to be desired? When you have vermin like that, excuse me, worms like that running Hollywood today, who have destroyed virtually every value mankind has held dear to civilization. They are the vandals of our soul in creating this hatred for the divine bond between man and woman. Now, I'm not going to sit here and pretend that I'm the Pope. That's not what I'm trying to do. But I will tell you that if children were taught about the beauty between man and woman, you wouldn't have little boys thinking that they're little girls, and you wouldn't have little girls saying that they're little boys. But if you look at what's being put into the heads of our little children, either you turn your head around and say, God, how could you do this to us? How could you let a society melt down like this so rapidly? How did this happen? So I talk about things like this. I talk about how the brain can be infected by eating raw meat from a parasite. Parasite with a name. Toxoplasma gondii. But what about the soul of a nation being infected by Toxoplasma Spielbergii? Or Toxoplasma of fill in your favorite actor? They're like a toxic virus that has infected the mentality of our nation's soul.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
I'm not too spiritual. I'll get to work. Turn it off. It's too emotional for me to play something as highbrow as that on the Savage Nation. First of all, the average listener to talk radio right now, all I can think about is delegates. That's all I know. You play music like that, they think that you're somehow a communist or a subversive because you're not talking about delegates. Now they're all experts suddenly on delegates. But one second, they make them delegate experts. So I'm doing anything but delegates. If you're tuning in to hear that, you got the wrong show on, Johnson. But I've given you a lot of food for thought in the first 30 minutes. I would say even a progressive woman would have something to say about something of what I said. Henry on WABC, you've taken the bait. Henry, what's the topic?
Yeah, hi. I want to talk about what you started, that we're saying it. I'm Orthodox, and you said that we're saying every morning that we're thanking God for not creating us women. First of all, we respect very much women. That's why our divorce rate is at 4% and not at 90%. But the reason we're saying that is we believe that females are not coming down on this world to correct anything. They are corrected. They're coming down to help men correct their habits in themselves.
Oh, you're not, look, Henry, I know what you're saying is important, but so far I've heard one out of three words. So, Robert, you got to do a better job of modulating them. It's not your fault. Henry is responding. Henry's an Orthodox Jewish gentleman who is responding to my having read one of the sayings in the Jewish prayer book in the morning where the Jewish people say, blessed are you, Lord our God, King of the universe, who has not made me a woman. So you're arguing that that's not anti-woman is what you're saying, isn't that?
Yes, yes. And the reason we're saying that is, so we're thanking the Lord for giving us opportunity to do a lot of commandments that are not given for women because they are corrected already. And it's like a president who has the Secretary of Defense. And he also
Wait. I'm not, hold it. You went over something. You're saying that you're actually glorifying women by saying that because women are more evolved than men? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, they are corrected, but the reason we're thanking God is because at the end, men are given a lot of commandments that women are not given. So we thank God for giving us the opportunity to serve him in a way that women are not given.
So you're saying, but why is the woman not required to follow those commandments? Because what, she's more evolved?
Because they are born corrected and men are not. So we have
to... Henry, what you're saying is very important to me. You're saying they're more corrected than men are?
Yes, it says that at first Adam was born, and God saw that he wasn't complete, meaning he has a lot of bad habits, so he created Eva to help him correct himself. That's why men have to always cherish women, and in a marriage, we have to give in a lot to the women because we have to change our bad habits and be nicer people. So that's why we're given a lot of commands.
So that's where the phrase the better half comes from. Because when I was a kid, the jokes in all of the movies were, well, there's your better half, when they were referring to women. So in those days, even the movies always deferred to women. Today they treat women like garbage.
Yeah, that's correct. And that's why you'll see by us there's only 4%. The divorce rate is at 4% and not 90%.
No, that's so beautiful. What you told me is something I will actually carry with me for a long time, Henry. You know, people don't understand how important this is, what you just said. It's so easy to read that statement of thank God for not making me a woman and assume it is misogynistic when, in fact, you have just told this entire audience of millions of people the opposite is true.
Yes, and I thank you.
Henry, I'm speechless at what a man can learn if he's open-minded. And I just learned, I learned from you. I'm not saying what you learned from me. What I learned from you. So you didn't take affront at my reading it. You didn't think I was mocking the Jewish people, I hope, when I first read it, did you?
Of course not, because I know you respect religion very much.
This is the difference between an intelligent person like you and people who are not intelligent and just mean-spirited, who will take no matter what a man says and twist it into something that it isn't. And I thank you for being almost a divine scholar in many ways. You're not a rabbi, are you? You're just an ordinary man, so to speak?
I'm a sales rep on the road, and I try to uplift people with spiritual things, but I'm not a rabbi at all. I just, you know, I know what I'm doing, and I know what I'm saying. I'm not doing stuff just because I'm stupid. I know what I'm doing.
So wait a minute. This is interesting. So you're on the road selling outside of New York, I assume, or in New York?
I live in New York, but I fly all over the country, and I go all over.
All right. Okay, so you're almost, in a way, you're taking a big risk going into strange towns, strange cities. You're an Orthodox Jew. You're wearing black clothing. Are you of the Lubavitch sect or which?
No, I'm not. I'm actually, it's a small sect called Pupa. But let me tell you one thing. When I walk in, let's say it's a conservative Jewish store or something like that, I see right away the hatred. But after 2 minutes, they listen to me and how I respect everyone, what they believe in, not how they look, but what they believe in. Like, it clicks right away, and people...
But what if you go into a store where there are no Jewish people? Do they look at you funny?
They might look. They start asking questions, and thanks God, I know all the answers, I think. And I answered very nicely. I'm very respectful to anyone, and they like it.
But when you talk to devout Christian people, who are probably the most interesting and respectful of all the people you meet, are they usually very impressed with your knowledge?
They are. We go into different stuff, and as long as people, even in politics, I always discuss politics because I love it, and I talk a lot about you. And people, as long as you respect everyone, even though you have, you know, I think differently than they are, as long as I respect people and I explain my stuff, not screaming, just explaining it, people love it, and I got a lot of people to change to the Republican side. Not Republican, I'm more of a libertarian, but even Trump stuff, I change people all the time.
Well, we could talk for a very long period of time, because I would ask you questions about your travels, in the sense that in a certain way, you declare yourself to be an ordinary man here. You are an ordinary salesman, like in the Christian religion, Jesus was a simple man. You're somewhat of a missionary of God in some ways, aren't you?
I'm not. I am, because I have a lot of personal stories that I like to tell people. Like, in every day, I see God every day changing stuff. Like, He sends me not a bad thing happens to me, but stuff happens to me which is telling me that I have to change something. If I did something wrong to someone in business, anything else, I'll see that day something happening to me, and I'll know I have to change it. And I see miracles all the time, and it's regular stuff. I'm just an ordinary guy. I'm not like a rabbi, anything like that. And people get moved by it, and you know, people like to listen to it. But I'm not a rabbi at all.
I don't want to harp on the negative. You just moved me with what you just said, because I sensed that before you said it. But I will ask you this: have you encountered prejudice, and if so, where?
If you can explain yourself, please.
Have you, in your travels as a religious man, you don't dress like an ordinary American. I assume you wear some kind of religious clothing, right?
Right, right. The answer is no, because, and I don't see anti-Semitism in America at all. People treat you how you treat them. When I walk around, I always give a smile to everyone. And I know a few words of not all, you know, all languages, but I know a little Italian, Russian, Polish. I know a little of everything. And when you say hello to someone, you smile to them, they'll never be bad to you. They always smile back, and I love seeing people, and I love traveling. No one is bad to me, not at all, no.
Well, you have brought a warm feeling to my heart with this story, and I think you've touched an awful lot of people today, Henry. And I don't know what to say to you other than thank you. I don't know if you have children. Would they like a picture book about me and my dog, Teddy?
They would love it. I got four, but I want to tell you one thing. I'm going for Trump like crazy, and only because you're putting out a lot of ideas, but none of the politicians are picking it up. He is the only one who picked it up. That's why I'm backing him like crazy. If Cruz was picked it up, I would go for Cruz, but I think Trump is saying everything you are saying for the last few years. That's why I love Trump, and I want him to win, because he's going to take your ideas and implement them.
Well, I didn't put these words in your mouth, but you certainly put these words out to the atmosphere for all to hear. So, look, stay on the line, Henry. I'm going to send you a beautiful illustrated book that will be out in a few weeks called Teddy and Me, and your children will just love it. And you'll see a lot of pictures of your talk show host, Michael Savage, in there. And there's almost no politics. It's just something else entirely. I needed a change of pace. Henry, bless you in all your travels. I'm not a religious person, but I'm extremely knowledgeable about the forces that operate in this universe. And I want to thank you for that call. Wow. You know, I need to take a deep breath. I got to say this to my audience. Every once in a while, I get a call that's... what's the word I want to use? A game changer, as we say in American parlance. That call was a game changer. Do you know that? In that, the reverberations of what that man, that unknown man, unknown to us, unknown to you, what that man just said has affected an awful lot of people listening on their radios or on their iPhones or wherever they may be. It's going to make them think about their own behavior in ways we could never, ever understand. And what I'm trying to do here is put out a different vibe in a different direction to pick up different callers who are putting out a similar sensibility about the universe. And that's why I talked about Pope Francis and his encyclical from Amoris Laetitia on the beautiful love between husband and wife, and especially long-lasting marriages, which nobody talks about anymore. It's turned into a mockery because of our society. And I have to say that wherever it comes from, you go for it, right? We're also talking about, God, the other topics, which I don't want to mention right now, but I'll be back to talk about them with you on the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Hey, our Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I trust for wealth insurance, gold and silver. Call 800-BUY-COI. So you see, an ordinary man like Henry calls the show, and you find out that the ordinary man is not so ordinary after all. And I think that's the message that we just got from that call. And I have faith in the ordinary man, I have no faith in politicians. I never have and I never will. Some are better than others. Some might give us some of what we want, but I have no faith in them. I have faith in the ordinary man who has faith in God, faith in himself, and faith to do the right thing. That's who defeated the Superman. I wrote that before in some of my previous writings, that it was every man who defeated Superman in World War II. Remember Hitler said his soldiers were supermen? Well, it was every man. It was the Eddie, the guy who went to the Yankee Stadium and watched the ball game and went to dance with his girlfriend on Saturday night, the guy who liked jazz, the guy who liked Benny Goodman. That's who defeated Superman. It wasn't somebody extraordinary. And I think that's what I'm saying. We got to turn back to ourselves here, given the destruction of our faith in leadership. There is none in America. There's nowhere to turn. And we see Republican Party destroying our last semblance of hope in democracy itself. Again, we have to turn inward. So where are the fanatics coming from? They're not coming from the Christian community. They're not coming from the Jewish community. The fanatics are coming at us from the Muslim community. And if you doubt me, then read what Muslims themselves have to say about their own religion. And I'll talk about that in the dire prediction that unless they're reined in within 5 years, this country is doomed. It'll be over. Because they're on a war path. Read the article from someone who knows. Sebastian Gorka. Breitbart News National Security Editor, Dr. Sebastian Gorka, said that we're going to lose this war against the Muslim hordes unless we talk about the enemy as they are. And he talks about the history of jihad, where it began and how they're winning, because we won't even define them for what they are and what their holy book tells them to do. It's an amazing story, which we'll talk about at another time. And the fanatics are also coming at us from the climate world. The gangsters and the green gang. Here's an article on michaelsavage.com from the Providence Journal. Professor says climate change deniers deserve punishment. He wants to prosecute think tanks, advocacy groups, oil companies who don't think the way he does. A so-called professor. This is like Hitler. Name is Michael Kraft. Probably a nice guy. Probably very much in love with himself. The type of guy that you see in restaurants at night. Very civil, very nice. You watch them talk at a table. Very polite. And he wants to prosecute people who don't believe in the big lie of climate change. So you look at this guy, Michael E. Kraft, professor emeritus of poli-sci and public and environmental affairs at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. Not a scientist. He knows nothing about science. He's a political scientist, which means he's an opinionist. He has opinions. Now, poli-sci is all opinions. I love when they say political science. There was never science in politics. It was all political opinion, political theory. There's no science in politics. And everyone I know who went into poli-sci as an undergrad, I'm sorry to say they couldn't go into anything real. Public and environmental affairs, whatever that means. Again, it's editorializing. University of Wisconsin, Green Bay, oh, there's Professor Emeritus of poli-sci. So it shows you how far they've fallen, these liberals. Or, let's say, pseudo-liberals. Michael E. Kraft, climate change deniers deserve punishment. So we got fanaticism coming at us from the progressive left and from the radical Islamists. And the rest of us have to muddle through life the best we can. And we do. We do the best we can. As far as the election goes, forget about it. I'm not talking about it today. I'm through with it. You want to read what I have to say? Read about it on michaelsavage.com. Great article. It was on the Drudge Report for almost 12 hours. Now, my site went down, by the way, last night. I mysteriously went off the air. Around 9 p.m. Pacific, midnight Eastern, I went on my website because I'm one of these guys who's up all the time, except when I sleep, which is not a paradox. But in other words, when I'm sleeping, I'm not up. But when I'm up, I'm on. So at 9 p.m., I went on my site. I couldn't get on it. It was no longer there. So I said, does it have something to do with this article? I don't know. I doubt it. But who knows the way things work? Who knows what really goes on in the world of the Internet? Who really controls what happens, right? Anyway, I went to the dentist yesterday. I had anesthesia for some minor work, and I came out, and I learned something. Never mix grape and grain, which I've always known, nor anesthesia and the grape, which I also knew. But I will tell you this, that grain doth mix with lidocaine. I'll be right back on the Savage Nation to continue to be here so you won't be nowhere.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Talk radio for the thinking person, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
Can't give you the time because show rotates around the country, all sorts of times and places. Most people hear it in real time, so we're talking about so many different topics, it's impossible to summarize, which is the kind of show I like the most. And I began with religion. I asked you about religion. Is it a part of your life and why? What does it do for you? Meaning, not as, I don't mean like you just go ritually to church or you pray and mumbo jumbo. I mean, is it a part of your life that really matters? Does it do anything for you? Does religion empower you in some way? How? Because we never hear about it. All we see again is Hollywood mocking religious people, calling you basically Jesus freaks. They always make a mockery of you, which is sickening to me. But okay, we know who they are. We know who these mockers are in Hollywood. They've done very, very well indeed. And they do very well in mocking the religious. But you'll notice they only pick on Christians. When did they last mock the Buddhist? All of these brave, brave comedians that go on the Howard Stern show. When did they last mocked Islam? All of these brave, brass men who go on the Howard Stern show. When did they last mocked the Buddhist or a Jewish person? Why, the answer is never. Instead, they mock Christians because Christians are the most peaceful people on the planet. So it's a cheap shot. And they think they're wild and crazy by mocking Christians. So you see what I'm saying? This is what I'm asking you. Like, okay, without mocking anyone in the religious world, don't put anyone down. Does religion kind of help you in everyday life? How? What does it do for you? Could eating rare steak give you road rage? That's another, nothing to do with religion. I was talking about the bug Toxoplasma gondii. And it's an important one because steak tartare has become very popular. I've known people who will order raw steak in a restaurant. I try to caution them. I say, look, there are parasites in raw meat. They don't understand what a parasite is. They've never taken high school biology. Do you realize they've never looked inside a microscope? All the geniuses who work for Facebook? They never looked in a microscope, most of them. They don't even know what a paramecium looks like, let alone Toxoplasma gondii. So they can't understand what you're saying to them. Oh, steak tartare is good. It doesn't have enzymes. All a genius. It doesn't have enzymes. Excuse me. It's full of enzymes. The enzymes haven't been cooked out. They read it in the back of a magazine somewhere about enzymes. So they eat raw food. So now they go from raw vegetables to raw meat, and they wind up in the emergency room. And they don't know why. Well, there's a reason that mankind learned to cook with fire. A lot of reasons. It wasn't just to make the food warmer. It was to kill organisms that could harm mankind. They originally didn't know that, but they knew that those who ate food that was cooked were generally healthier and lived longer. Trial and error, that's how that worked. So that's how, you see, things evolved. So now we're going back. We're going back in so many ways to things that have been tested and found to be harmful, and we're going back anyway. We're going back to paganism on a moral level, which means we're going to immorality, and we're holding it up as something new and wonderful that's going to liberate mankind. Well, it never has liberated mankind. Immorality has only imprisoned mankind, and it will imprison you all over again. But okay, that's your problem, not mine. It's your problem. I'm not interested in it. Don't bother me with your affairs, as a man once said to me. I'm not interested in your affairs. I knew a poet who was like that in North Beach. He was such an evil bum. He's the one person I really hated. He was so evil. This guy, when he was on alcohol, was a monster. When he was on heroin, he was a nice guy. He would leave you alone. So thank God he's dead. But if you'd come up to him thinking he was your friend at a certain point, I'm not interested in your affairs, which was very funny. Actually, it's something to be used against people if you don't like them and you don't want them bothering you. Why do people think they have to tell you about their whole life story and what's bothering them? Who has time for it is what he's saying. He had his own troubles. But anyway, I'm getting distracted. So, raw meat, raw actions, raw misery, raw politics, raw fighting, MMA, all connected. Rawness, rawness, rawness. So now in this hour of power on the Savage Nation, I want to introduce something that's somewhat amusing and interesting to me. There's a character who's very wealthy named Mark Zuckerberg. We're all jealous of him because he's made $58 billion in his own pocket. And that's good. We all admire him for that. We're all jealous of him. We all wish we could do it. Anyone who says otherwise is a liar. However, the man is a raging hypocrite when it comes to politics. A raging hypocrite in every way. So today he comes out with a speech taking on Trump, and he warns against building a wall. And the speech is on, you can see, linked up on the top of the Drudge Report from The Hill. And his speech is so pathetic, if you listen to it. Here's Mr. Undershirt criticizing fearful voices, calling for building walls. So let's play, and this is the shocker. Wait until you hear Zuckerberg's voice. You're not going to believe what it sounds like. It's as though we finally heard from George Soros. Listen to Zuckerberg.
As I look around and as I travel around the world, I'm starting to see people and nations turning inward against this idea of a connected world and a global community. I hear fearful voices calling for building walls and distancing people they label as others, for blocking free expression, for slowing immigration, reducing trade, and in some cases around the world, even cutting access to the internet. It takes courage to choose hope over fear.
Oh, my. Oh, my, Mark. Who wrote that for you? Did Wifey write that for you? Or is that a leftover essay from Harvard in ethnic studies? So here's the rhetoric of a failed politician with a weird voice, by the way. I don't know where this voice came from, but let's put that aside. Many people are not blessed with great voices, and he's one of them. But putting aside his voice, what do you think of Zuckerberg calling for open borders? What do you think of Zuckerberg saying it's fearful to erect barriers? Well, my friends, it's quite clear what he's saying is that the demon just wants cheap labor. It's as simple as that. All he wants is cheap labor. Not enough money on the planet for him. Not enough money in the world for him. No matter what you would give him, the man will never stop trying to make more. And so this is not right or left. This is just common sense. So why do you suppose that the Europeans have become fearful of the Muslim hordes that are coming in from the Middle East? I'll give you a little information on that, if you like, because there's a little information that Zuckerberg apparently doesn't get up there in the towers of a face world. And in the world, the real world, not the world of Facebook, not the world of Google, not the world of Microsoft. In other words, all these hypocrites who have huge walls around their mansions, huge walls that are unassailable around their income, so that the government doesn't even take any taxes from them. Oh, huge walls around them. I'd like to find out what Zuckerberg actually pays in state and federal taxes personally. I'd like to find out how many different ways to Sunday Facebook is protected from paying their fair share of taxes to the United States Treasury. This little guy bullied his neighbors so they'd sell him more privacy to put a fence around this house. I mean, Facelberg, you talk about a hypocrite. This isn't even worth getting mad at. All this is money. He pushes climate change and runs around probably on a G6 with a huge carbon footprint. If he's not flying a 767, I have no idea what it is, but he certainly puts out a big footprint. And he tells you to open your heart and your wallet to illegal aliens. And he hides his assets in a phony foundation for tax breaks. My goodness. Does it get any better than this? So, my friends, you're going to buy this kind of garbage, probably, if you went to Berkeley, yes. And if you want to comment on it, go ahead, make my day. But why are the Europeans putting up barriers? Why are they suddenly saying niet to immigrants from Africa and Asia? It could be because they've learned what it's done to them. It could be because they've seen the truth of the open borders policy and how it is destroying their nations, and they recognize that their nations will disappear in a few years unless they build up the walls, just as we know that that's why Trump's so popular, because we all know we need a wall. He's the only one who said it. Whether he will continue on that path going forward is another question, which I doubt. I don't want to get into that today, maybe tomorrow or another day, but I don't think Trump is going to be the same man, is not the same man today as he was yesterday. I'll tell you that right now. I've seen a difference overnight. And that is because the new handlers are all the old Bob Dole, types. They're going to do to him what they did. If he's not careful, and I hope his listeners, his handlers are listening to me, if he allows the new people he's hired to do to him what I think they're doing to him, he's going to wind up like Michelle Bachmann. And you won't even know of him in a few months. He'll be forgotten. Because what got him here at all is his toughness, his brashness, and his outspokenness. And if they turn him into just another nice guy politician, he's toast. But that's what they're probably advising him to become. And I'm sorry to tell you, it's not going to work. You know what I'd like to hear right now as I take a breather and wait for some calls? 855-407-282, 855-407-SAVAGE. Such good topics. I want to hear Billy Paul's Me and Mrs. Jones on for a couple of seconds, if you can dig that up, Robert. It's such a beautiful song. Zuckerberg criticizes fearful voices. Fearful voices calling for building walls. And it sounds very noble to listen to him. But, of course, it's all about the economic interests of his company and those around him who live in a bubble in their own world, walls, surrounded by walls, of course. Dianne Feinstein surrounded by 10-foot walls. Nancy Pelosi surrounded by 10-foot walls, as it should be. They're not like you and I. They can tell you not to have a wall. They tell you your wall should only be 6 feet high. And that you can't have an armed guard in your neighborhood, but they can. Because they're different than you and I. And, of course, they're for open borders because it's in their interest to be for open borders and the interest of those they associate with, like Zuckerberg. Like Facebook, Microsoft, and all the others at Google, they're all interested in advancing their economic interests, which, of course, is what business people are supposed to do. But we know that. But a nation is supposed to be interested in advancing its own interests, and they're supposed to prevent rapacious individuals within their own borders from overriding the interests of the nation. That would be good government, wouldn't it? Wouldn't good government mean that you govern rapacious individuals who are super intelligent and very powerful, and you control those rapacious individuals, or they eventually warp your entire nation? Isn't that what a nation is that has good governance? Govern, control. A good governance means you control elements that can be harmful to the nation. Unfortunately, since Obama is wholly owned by these individuals, they've turned the entire power of the government against those of us who actually love the nation and hate the government. Listen to what I just said. You can hate your government and love your nation. They're not one and the same thing. But an overbearing government would have you believe that they are the nation when they're not the nation, especially when they don't represent the major interests of the nation. They represent some other things, some other elements, mainly international interests. So look, we don't have the time. This is not a 6-hour Castro-like lecture in the plaza at sunset where you could sit and drink some rum and listen to me. Because if I had 3 hours right now without interruption, and you were just sitting in the plaza listening to El Jefe exhorting what's going on in the world, I would tell you about the Crusades. And I will tell you what happened before the Crusades, and I will tell you what happened that saved Christianity. And I will tell you soon enough that unless Christianity receives a new enthusiasm that sweeps the Western world, and Christianity itself rises up against the forces against it, the entire West will collapse in your lifetime. I'll say that right now, and I can almost prove it. I can almost feel it. It's palpable to me. And I'm not the only one who sees it or feels it. Anyone I know with an intelligence level above a certain minimal amount sees what's going on in Europe, and they say that we're not far behind. We have maybe 5 years to elect someone who will not only build up that wall, but beat ISIS to a pulp. Because the fact is, we have conservative or right-wing administrations, like Bush, so-called. We have left-wing administrations, like Obama. And none of them have succeeded in defeating the war that is ongoing. Because we have no real leadership, because the leaders don't understand what's really going on. So you go back to the Fort Hood massacre, Nidal Hassan. He's writing in his medical records, Allah Akbar, may Allah be praised. This is a medical doctor in an army base. For years he's writing a religious message on all of his patients' records, may Allah be praised. Now, could you imagine if a Christian doctor in the Army had written Jesus Saves once? He would have been drummed out of the military in 10 seconds. So here we had a mad Muslim, literally a ticking time bomb, writing Allah be praised. They should have known he was a fanatic. Eventually goes and he kills 13 people and wounds 52, reloading, killing a pregnant woman amongst them. And he's still not executed, by the way. How come Mr. Nidal Hassan has not yet been executed by Obama? Who's keeping him alive and why? Why is this guy, this Dr. Nidal Hassan, who committed this massacre, still living? Have you thought about that, my friends? Now connect Fort Hood massacre, the recent massacre in San Bernardino, the attack in Brussels, the attack in Paris, the attack at 9/11. If you think they're disconnected, you're insane. Those who do not know the history are condemned to repeat it, and you're condemned to the... Well, I'll finish later. So, many of us think that these Muslim attacks of terrorism are infrequent, disconnected, they're going to end one day, and will prevail. But those who actually study what's going on are not so sure. Dr. Sebastian Gorka with Breitbart says we will lose a winnable war against jihad if we refuse to talk about the enemy as they are. And he said if we were refused to say that the Nazis were Nazis, we would have lost World War II. But we have a president who won't even say Islamic terrorism right now. And then you look a little more into what he has to say, and you look about Islamist terror going all the way back to 1979. And he says, if we don't have a sense of victory, if we don't talk about the enemy as they are, we could lose this war. He warned. He said, America is 10 years behind Europe. If you look at the threat internally and not just from terrorism, we've got tops 5 years. If the next administration does not go to war with our Muslim allies against the jihadists, we could lose this either kinetically or from the inside through subversion, 5 years maximum. Notice he said, go to war with our Muslim allies. That's something Obama refuses to do. In fact, Obama refuses to even acknowledge that he and Hillary almost brought about the opposite of what needs to be done in Egypt. They should be, well, let's stop right there. Impeached is what I was going to say. Brought to a world court for having done what Hillary did in upsetting the world order in the Middle East, unleashing millions of refugees because of her insane Arab Spring policy, funded by George Soros. The architect, the best I can tell, Brzezinski, Carter's national security advisor. I wrote about all of this in Government Zero. But I want to move forward on this because I know exactly what's going on. I know about Muslim extremism. I know where it comes from. I know it's in the Quran. And many of you think that if only they'd reform, they'd go through a reformation, all would be well. But Dr. Gorka says, no, no. Those of you who don't know Islam better read the Quran. He said the best thing you could do is read the second half of the Quran and not listen to the gibberish put out by the president or his liberal allies about Islam. He said read the Quran yourself. Read the second part, which calls for holy war against everyone to subdue them and convert them. It's in their holy book, he says. He's not making it up. If he were, I wouldn't be quoting him. So don't listen to the garbage that you're hearing from the liberals who don't even read, and yet they make believe they've read. No, it's not a religion of peace. It's a religion of conquest. The word itself, Islam, means submission. It does not mean peace. So now, take a breath, step back. We'll get to politics in a minute. I can tie it in for a minute if you wish. We have one candidate who mentioned the word Muslims, Donald Trump. He said, stop bringing them in until we can figure this thing out. Well, he was called every name under the sun. Of course, they were all wrong and he was all right. He got this idea mainly because he's listened to talk radio long enough to know that that is an issue. He himself probably knows it's real, but he also knows it's a great political issue. Either the others know it and are afraid to touch it, or they don't know it and they're even more useless, but I don't care about that right now. I care now about the conquests that are going on around the world by the Islamic extremists. First, they were called, you may remember, Al-Qaeda. Actually, before Al-Qaeda, they were called the Mujahideen in Afghanistan. Remember the Russians were fighting the Mujahideen and we, under Ronald Reagan, supported the Mujahideen against the Russians, against the evil Soviet Empire? You remember it was old Ronald Reagan who sent Stinger missiles to the Mujahideen in the hills of Afghanistan? And they used the Stinger missiles from the U.S. to shoot down these great Russian helicopters, capture the Russian soldiers, torture them, imprison them, or whatever. That was our wonderful failed policy of trying to fight Russia through a proxy called the Mujahideen in Afghanistan. Then the Mujahideen became Al-Qaeda. Then Al-Qaeda became ISIS. And now we're bringing them in the dozens under the guise of asylum. They're pouring into America, claiming to be just like your grandfather. And you're buying the liberal lie that we're all immigrants, they're all the same, just because they're different, don't close the walls. And Zuckerberg from Harvard repeats the big lie that we're afraid of these people or we despise these people because they look different, because they speak a different language, because they worship another god. No, Mark, that's not the answer, Mark, and you know it. No, the answer is history, Mark, something you didn't learn at Harvard. You learned business pretty good, but you didn't learn history at all. Because if you knew history, you wouldn't open up that pie trap of yours and say such things about don't build walls, don't be afraid of the other. I've heard all this crap. This is all left-wing rubbish. And so you go to the experts, and they say, man, you better know what's going on. You better understand how the Western media has never assigned the reality of what's reality to this issue of Islamic extremism, and how deeply threatening it is to our survival in the future of Western civilization. Now, as you well know, the radical feminists for years have been screaming, hey, hey, ho, ho, Western civilization has got to go. It started with the feminists or lesbians, whatever you want to call them. It started back in the 70s, 80s. Hey, hey, ho, ho, Western civ has got to go. Hey, hey, ho, ho, burning the bras, attacking the white male, thinking that all would be great if they tore down the white male's edifices of Western civilization. Well, now let's move forward and see what's going on now that Western civilization is weakened. Tell me who's the most threatened. Well, most threatened would be women, homosexuals, and every other religion on the planet. Everyone knows this who studied what happens when these fanatics take over a village, a town, a city, or a nation. Everybody knows what happens, especially Muslims. They know better than you do. They're not given to such glib statements such as it's a religion of peace, or that if only you let them in, they'll learn to be like you. They'll never be like you. They hate you. So I'll pause right there, and I'll say something that I think is important to say connected to this Islamic invasion, and that is this is closer to the Mongol conquest than anything else historically as I can see. And I think I touched on it in Government Zero. But I will divulge something now that I've not yet divulged. It's already April 12th. I told you that I was working on this new book, Teddy and Me, which is coming out in a few weeks. It was a relaxing book. It was to get me off politics, and it's beautiful. And you can buy a copy for Mother's Day. It's on michaelsavage.com. It's on Amazon. It's on Barnes & Noble. It's a beautiful book. It's about me and my dog. Very little politics in it. Day in the life of, you know, Confessions of a Service Human. But at the same time I was doing that, at the same time I'm doing a three-hour radio show, I am writing the sine qua non of my entire life. It's my last political book. I've been working on it virtually from the day I finished Government Zero. It is a sequel to Government Zero. I will not tell you the title because it's not important that I do. But in this book that's coming out, my last book, I talk about a number of things, including the danger of radical Islam, and I compare it to the reality of, the historical reality of the Mongol conquests. And I go back to the 13th century, and I talk about the Mongols. And who were they? Well, they were a Tartar people. I don't mean teeth, Tartar people. Who came from an area to the north of China that came out of almost nowhere and rose almost suddenly to prominence in the world's affairs. And then they achieved such a series of conquests so rapidly that has no parallel in history to this day. And who were they? They were the Mongols. At the opening of the 13th century, they were just a horde of nomadic horsemen, living very much as their predecessors, the Huns, had lived. Subsisting mainly on meat, mare's milk, and living in tents of felt. They broke free of the Chinese, and then they combined or brought together Turkish tribes into a military confederacy. And their central camp was on the Onon River in Siberia. And then what happened is historically something you can study for yourself. And they invaded. and they pushed east, and they pushed west, and they pushed south, and they pushed north, and they conquered virtually everything in their path. In 1214, Genghis Khan, you heard of him, the leader of the Mongol Confederates, made war on the Qin Empire and captured Peking. He then turned west, conquered western Turkestan, conquered Persia, conquered Armenia, conquered India down to Lahore, conquered Russia south as far as Hungary and the Silesia. And when he died, Genghis Khan, he was master of a vast empire that stretched from the Pacific to the Dnieper River. Dnieper River, D-N-I-E-P-R. It's an interesting place for me because I know that my grandfather came from that area. And very often I wonder why I'm not like anybody else I've ever met in my family or anyone I've ever met anywhere in this whole circle of people that I've known since childhood. And I pretty much think it has to do something to do with Mongols invading villages a long time ago is what I'm starting to think. But putting aside my putative Mongol origins, at least one piece of the lineage, I want to talk more about his successor, Ogdai Khan. Ogdai Khan and what he did and how they moved to conquer and what they did. And when they conquered, when the Mongols conquered, they did something never before seen in human history. They massacred or assimilated the kindred people. For example, when they went into Hungary, they massacred or assimilated the kindred Magyar. Even as the Magyar had previously massacred and assimilated the mixed Scythians and Avars and Huns before them. So what you must understand is that within the human genetic code, within the human social code, within human beings, there is a genetic horror of massacring the conquered. Don't assume it's all going to be like a Hallmark card. Only the difference today, my friends, is that we are inviting those who would do this to us into our country as the Trojan horse. We're welcoming them in. We're blessing them. And as we bless them, they look at us and spit in our faces. How stupid these people are. How weak they are. How foolish they are. And they have no respect for you. And then again, going back to the Mongols, how they moved into Asia by the middle of the 13th century through this ruthless insanity and their conquests. They had conquered the Sung Empire and so forth and so on. And they went on and they displayed a animosity to Islam that has never been seen since. You don't know this about the Mongols, but I'll conclude this little pocket piece of history with this. The Mongols had an animosity to Islam at this time, and they not only massacred the entire population of Baghdad when they conquered that city in Iraq. There was no Iraq then. They conquered them, they killed everyone in the city, and then they went out and destroyed the entire immemorial irrigation system, which had kept Mesopotamia prosperous and populous from the early days of Samaria. In other words, they destroyed the water supply into Baghdad to make certain the people would never come back. And do you know that from that time on, almost until Saddam Hussein, Mesopotamia remained a desert of ruins? And it was only able to support a scanty population. And then the Mongols went into Egypt. They could not get through into Egypt. You know why? Because the Sultan of Egypt completely defeated an army of Hulagus in Palestine in 1620. Then they conquered again. In the east, the Mongols became Buddhists. They were then absorbed by the people they conquered. Did you know that? This is an interesting story of human. Am I losing the audience, Robert? Is too much history? Are they going to sleep now? They want to hear about delegates or something like that? Or about Cruz? Should I say Cruz? 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 Trump! 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 Trump Cruz! I used to get this when Rand Paul was running, then Ron Paul. Ron Paul. We'd get bug callers day and night. Ron Paul, Ron Paul, Ron Paul, Ron Paul. You'd get them on the Facebook. Ron Paul, Ron Paul, Ron Paul. Then you get Rand Paul, Rand Paul, Rand Paul, Rand Paul. Gone. Gone with the wind. Same thing is going to happen here. But long after these names that are so important to us now are in our minds and everywhere in the media, long after they are gone and disappeared, there will still be history. And there'll be the Mongol history, and there'll be much to learn. And so the Mongols became Buddhists in China, like the Chinese they conquered. And in the West, they became Muslim. There's so much more to be talked about. I won't talk about it right now. We're talking about conquest. We're talking about the Mongol conquests going back into the 13th century. And why am I talking about the Mongol conquest in the 13th century? Because we are seeing a different type of a conquest right now. It's a conquest that, unless you see it for what it is, will destroy your civilization. And if you're one of those radical feminists who think you're going to do better with the new invasion, and better with the new invaders because you're a real progressive, and you're such an enlightened progressive, that you think that the new invaders are going to just love you to death, honey, all I can say is, you've come a long way, girl, and read a little history.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
My Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I trust to protect my wealth with gold and silver. Call 800-BUYCO. Well, in the few minutes that remain in this hour, because I know many of you stay the third hour or join us for the third hour now and some of you leave, I want to conclude my idea of what's happening in the world and our society by talking about, and I don't think I can do it in a minute, I'm sorry, next hour, how the sexual liberation and repression, how sexual liberation and repression as a result of the left-wing revolution of the 60s has destroyed the fabric of American society. And I'm going to talk about that in the next hour. It's a very important component of why we're dying as a society and more broadly as a civilization, and why others are moving in with a completely opposite vantage or opinion of sexual repression, and they're taking over the world, and why. And when you hear it, it may change your whole view of the whole picture. In the interim, I want to conclude with this issue of should the MMA be banned with one sentence. Brilliant friend of mine, Jeff Roven, writes from New York, "I've been training for 60 years since I was 4. The MMA is an abomination. It is a mashup of violent Israeli Krav Maga and the concussive Japanese forms like karate plus boxing. It is lawless and without the rules of wrestling. It completely ignores the Chinese forms like Kung Fu and Tai Chi. Why? Because those forms seek to defuse, not aggravate a situation. He says, a true martial artist of any stripe will try to use the many locks and holds that immobilize an opponent rather than damage them." And that's his last word on this whole issue of MMA. And we're talking about that because a man died in the ring. The referee should have stopped it when the guy was on the ground being pounded. How much concussion can a brain take? We're talking about this and the concussion that is being directed at the West. All this and more right on the Savage Nation.
Warning. The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Talk radio for the thinking person, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
What would this world be without artists? What a black, horrible, dead world it would be, wouldn't it? So we're talking about what makes a civilization worth living, you know. Buildings, yes. Light, yes. Why did man build cities and go to cities? Well, originally it was for commerce, to trade. And then eventually man wanted the cities to be beautiful. Once he had enough of the basics covered, he started building beautiful things. Because he needed his what? His spirit uplifted. He wanted to walk around his little town and see something beautiful. So who knows, he erected a statue or a building that was nicer than the other buildings, taller, more magnificent. He brought artists in to, you know, make it more beautiful. You go to a city, a great big city like New York, Chicago, great cities of light, and you're electrified by the light. So people are drawn to it like flies. They don't want to live in the darkness. I'd say many don't. They want to get out of the darkness. They want to avoid the darkness. They want to run from the void. They know what the void represents. They want life, in other words. Now, there are others who like quietude, and they want to be in the country. I get it. But the majority of mankind wants to run to the city and light. And we're talking about civilization and our civilization in particular, the greatness of our civilization at this time. I mean, I recognize that China was a great civilization by the 9th century. I get that. And while our ancestors were still swinging in trees, they had six-masted sailing ships. They invented paper. They invented dynamite. I get it all. I understand that, the history. But they died out. Why did China die out suddenly and so rapidly? Of course, they're on the ascent right now, thanks to your friends in the business world. But let's put that aside. Why did China go from a world, a most advanced civilization on Earth, and almost suddenly die off? It was because of the Mandarins. You may have heard of the Mandarins. I mean, you know, Mandarin Chinese food. But the Mandarins were the ruling class, like our politicians are. While we have 400 Mandarins with the long fingernails, in our case, the long knives, and they used to cut everyone up who challenges their control, their central control. The Mandarins of ancient China ruled completely and ruthlessly, and they crippled society with regulations and laws, in other words, with their bureaucracy. And eventually the great advances of China started to dry up. They inhibited the advances of China through regulation. They crushed it. That was how China started to die off. And then they collapsed and the warlords emerged. That's a little pocket view of what actually happened. And the reason I'm telling you is self-evident, because that's what's happening to America right now and all of the West. All of us know what the Mandarins are doing to us. The Mandarins, with Obama elected to be the chief Mandarin, the Mandarin in chief, to bamboozle us, lie to us, cajole us, threaten us, all with a smile, is meant for one thing, is to keep us under control, so that the other Mandarins can feast like the pigs they are off the tax base and do whatever they wish and tell us to follow their rules. So they do. They pay almost no taxes, the Mandarins. They set up tax laws that cripple us that don't apply to them. They write separate laws for themselves. So the corporations, and we'll have to name them again. I'll name them again. Facebook. Do I have to name them again? Go to Bernie Sanders. You'll get the names. Facebook, Microsoft, Google, just to name a very few. Take a look at what they pay in federal tax and ask yourself, how is this even possible that they get away with it? Answer is simple. Where does Obama go on vacation when he comes to the West Coast? Facebook, Google, etc. Where does he go? He goes where the money is, like Willie Sutton, the bank robber. And in exchange for being nice to him, the government looks the other way. The Mandarins look the other way at their tax evasion. And so now you come into an election like now, you see Bernie Sanders surging on the left because the so-called left, which is very hard to define, by the way, is insane about what the Mandarins are getting away with in this country. And on the other side, they're insane with what the Mandarins are getting away with in this country. And yet nothing happens. How is it that Sanders can't get anywhere and Trump can't get anywhere? Answer, because the Mandarins make sure they can't. And so America becomes more crippled, less freedom. Under the guise of freedom, they take away our freedom. So I wanted to tell you what's going on in terms of history, because I gave you a long little sketch of the Mongols in the 13th century in the last hour to compare them to the Islamic invasions around the world right now. And how the only solution is for this nation to get a new leadership, which will aid the Muslim nations who are fighting radical extremism in the Muslim world, or we're all doomed. Unless we help the Jordans of the world by giving them the weapons they've been begging for, unless we help the Kurds, who are not Muslim, of course, unless we help those who are fighting radical Islam by giving them the weapons they're begging for, unless we help the Christian groups that are fighting the Muslims in the Middle East, we're all doomed. And you have to ask yourself, why does the Mandarin class of the West not help them? Why does the Mandarin class, whether it be in London or in Washington or in Paris or in Germany, whatever, Berlin, whatever her name is, that oven stuffer, the meatloaf woman, why don't they help these people fight radical Islam? Well, the answer is because they're blind and they're stupid. They're blind and they're stupid. They're not as smart as you may think. You know, vicious people may be very clever, but they may not be that smart.
And they're destroying the very society they claim to be protecting and ennobling, but they're not. They're only ennobling or advancing their own inner circle of supporters. It's all about power. And this was never supposed to have happened in our country in particular. But it has happened, and it's occurring right in front of our eyes. So we see insurgent campaigns like that of Sanders on the Democrat side and Trump on the Republican side, despite the fact that he's a rich man, he is an insurgent. And we see that they're hitting stone walls now, erected by the ruling class or the Mandarins. And at that point, I'm going to take not a leap, I'm going to pause right there. And I'm going to go back to how I began the show hours ago. I began by asking you, does religion help you in your everyday life? And I talked about the Jewish morning prayer, where the Orthodox Jew amongst the prayers thanks God for not making them a woman. And then we had a caller, Henry, one of the greatest callers we've had in a long time, explaining how, although the Orthodox Jewish prayer book has a prayer in it which says, thank you, God, for not making me a woman, that was not misogynistic at all. Henry was brilliant. Henry was an ordinary man who was extraordinary. And Henry said, no, the reason the Jewish male says, thank you, God, for not making me a woman, is the opposite of what it may appear to be to us. He said, the woman doesn't have to do the things that a man has to do because she's more advanced than the man is. And the Orthodox man is thanking God for giving them the opportunity and the burden to perfect himself by doing these things. The woman doesn't have to do them because she's more evolved in essence than he is. That's what he told me. This is probably from a Kabbalistic tradition. I don't know what Henry's background is, but my guess is that Henry, the ordinary traveling salesman, is some kind of religious saint walking around the country. You never know, selling little things in little stores, because that's how saints are. They're not on stages in Oregon wearing purple robes with 12 Rolls Royces. They're not in Washington, D.C., flying the wife and kids to South America with two Air Force Ones, claiming they're down with the people. And so forth. You can fill in the blank yourself, you know. Get out the crayons and the coloring book of your own rhetoric, if you don't mind. I'm not up to that right now because time is short and the ideas are long. And then we went on to anatomy and how I have faith in the ordinary man, not in politicians. And that right now I say we have to turn within, and the everyman are the men who defeated the supermen of World War II. And I talked about Islam by an author named Gorka, who says we're going to lose the war unless we can talk about Islam as it is. And I talked then about another lame brain, so-called progressive professor, who wants to prosecute people who don't believe in climate change. And then I talked about an MMA fighter who died in the ring. And I said, should we ban the MMA? And I talked about the fact that the election right now is like a mixed martial arts fight. There's blood in the ring, and that's why we've been cheering it on, because we're primal, we're primitive, and we like the blood splattering coming off the campaign trail. So that's where we were, and we talked about Mark Zuckerberg, a schmendrick that he is. You know, you could be rich and stupid, too. I met some pretty bright people who were poor in my life. I met people who were poor with great dignity. I met people who are rich have no dignity. So, you know, don't assume because he's rich he's got dignity or he's really that smart. He thinks people believe his speech? Well, the speech was astonishingly superficial. Sounded like a college kid reading an essay he wrote for a poli-sci teacher to get an A in a little brown noser here. Criticizing fearful voices, calling for building a wall. Well, let me play it again. This is one of the richest men in the world, repeating the kind of shibboleths that they teach at Stanford, Berkeley, Harvard, and all of the other institutions of lower learning. Listen.
As I look around and as I travel around the world, I'm starting to see people and nations turning inward against this idea of a connected world and a global community. I hear fearful voices calling for building walls and distancing people they label as others, for blocking free expression, for slowing immigration, reducing trade, and in some cases around the world, even cutting access to the internet. It takes courage to choose hope over fear.
Oh, you're so full of it, Mark. It stinks. Didn't your mother ever tell you that you can fool some of the people some of the time, and you can fool all of your employees all of the time, but you can't fool the Savage Nation at all any of the time? Back in a moment.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
My Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com. It's the only company I trust to protect my wealth. Call 800-BUY-CO. Well, I hope you're enjoying the trip I'm taking you on, because it's been quite a wild ride today. I got to tell you, I know my show's pretty good. And where I've gone today, from the Bible, from religion, to invasion, to civilization, to this and to that, has been a roller coaster ride for many of you who follow the show very carefully. And I can't re-summarize what I'm saying. These shows are all one-off shows. They cannot be repeated. It's impossible. I can't even do it myself. And there's so much more to go. You know, the making of many books, there is no end, as is written in the Bible and Ecclesiastes. It's the same with me with radio. Of the making of many radio programs, there is no end. Because life itself, it's a continuum. It's a serial. It's a serial. Each day is a continuation of sort of the day before in my shows. They're not disconnected. It's part of a long chain going back years. And there's a thread, common threads that connect all of them. As I'm sure you know, borders, language, culture would be one of the threads, but there are others, and I'll leave it to you to figure out what they are and why you listen and what you want to hear. But having said that, I really want to get to something I haven't done yet. I could save it for tomorrow and make a whole show out of it, but I won't. It's about sexual liberation and repression and how it brought about what we're experiencing in this country right now. Because what's happening in this country, in terms of cultural degradation, is all related to the sexual revolution. We were warned that the method the communists would use to break down the walls of our society would be through the sexual revolution. This was well known going back a long time. You see, Marxist social equality meant an end to gender domination, which meant that women could do everything men did. Now move forward 40, 50, 60 years later, and look where the sexual revolution has led us. Is it not time to think about the so-called revolution more carefully? Should all things revolve around our hedonistic impulses? Sometimes controlling yourself is more important than expressing yourself in certain areas. By controlling yourself, you might just affect society and yourself for the better. Remember, if it feels good, do it. How'd that work out for you? Is it possible that unlimited freedom is suicide, just as unlimited repression is suicide? Like the Soviet system, that was unlimited repression, right? Well, we're all against unlimited repression, as in Stalin's Soviet Union. Well, the opposite of that is America today, with unlimited sexual freedom. They are both equally damaging to the social order, and we need someone to strike the balance. Now, I'm not saying let's go back to the 50s or something like that, but let's understand that there are facts related to behavior in a society. Well, I can give you all of these facts, but I'm giving you just a look into my views on this, of what happened to America and how we got where we are and what we need to do to save our souls and save ourselves. And that, I think, is something you need to study with regard to Marx's doctrine of gender equality, that everyone should have a career, no one should stay home and raise kids. But there's other elements involved in a healthy society. And I know what they are, and you know what they are, and you know why we're here, and you know why we're likely to stay here. Because the Mandarins are so powerful. The Mandarins control the movie industry. The Mandarins control what's left of the print industry. The Mandarins control virtually everything, with almost rare exception. And the Mandarins want you to have this idea that you are totally free, because you can sleep with anyone you want at any time, at any moment, and repetitively, day and night. Well, Orwell talked about it. He wrote Freedom is Slavery, because ultimately he was 100% right. And he also wrote that when I hear people screaming, I am free, I am free, I am free, he hears their chains rattling. That's what I see here in San Francisco. I see slaves running around in San Francisco who act in their own minds as the freest people on earth, thinking that they are the zenith of Western civilization, when they are the exact opposite. At least that's one man's opinion. Here I am in Brobbingdang, trying to give you a view of what's going on behind the Mandarin walls of San Francisco, ding ding, which I love very much, by the way. Went out last night, I got away from my greasy spoons, put on a suit and tie, went up to Nob Hill to one of the fanciest restaurants. I can't say the food was better than the Greasy Spoons I go to, but it was nice to see how the other half lives. It was nice to see civilization and its contents. It was nice to walk up the steps of Grace Cathedral and see the beautiful Gothic architecture, the bronze doors, and then realize that the church was closed, as are all religious institutions of the West, closed to the souls who are seeking to open themselves to God. It is the Savage Nation. Never eat raw and undercooked meat. I told you about that, boys and girls, didn't I, in hour one? Article came out from the Daily Mail. Of course, we in the health world knew this forever, that eating rare steak opens you up to parasites, Toxoplasma gondii, which at some point will infect half of adults in the world, because the Toxoplasma gondii will cause toxoplasmosis in the brain, and it's contracted mainly from raw meat, and it influences your behavior, like road rage, schizophrenia, attempted suicide, depression. I know you say, come on. Well, that's how science works. Either you understand science and you don't understand microbes, or you don't. If you want to live in a dream world and say, oh, I eat raw meat, it's good for me because I read in a health journal that it's fresh. The enzymes haven't been cooked out of it. You see, the juvenile idiocy that you hear from people in this field are amazing. No, no, never eat raw meat. Be like me. Demand that it's never rare. Never eat rare meat either, by the way. No, don't ask for your roast beef rare with blood all over the plate, because you're going to get a parasitic bug whether you know it or not, either in a small dose or a large dose. And if you eat it completely raw, you're going to get a large dose. So don't eat or handle raw or undercooked red meat, especially lamb. Very important you know that. I know. How am I going to that from the Mongols? I don't know. Well, I am. There's a connection. Steak tartare. Steak tartare, I think, references the Tartars. It references how they ate food, raw meat. How'd it work out for them? Well, I conquered half the world at the time. But Genghis Khan died young, I think, from eating raw meat, by the way, incidentally. You go to a restaurant, why do you have to have bloody meat? Oh, I like it rare. I like it rare. Well, you may like it rare, but you're poisoning yourself. You ought to think about it. It's like the guys who smoke cigars all their lives, and they're 55 or 50, and they think that they're going to live. Oh, I smoke cigars all my life. I'm fine. I'm fine. I'm fine. No, no, you're not fine. You're about 80% burned up inside from the cigar smoke. How could you not understand that there are penalties for certain substances that you take and that you ingest? Let's put it to you that way. So, yeah, we're talking about the personal now. We're going to the ecology of the interior of the individual from the ecology of the human race, the ecology of civilizations. You can do this. It's all the same if you have a global mind, actually a cosmic mind as I do. You could see everything at once. Compound eye, compound mind, compound audience, rubbing compound, you know, it's all related in some way. If, in other words, if you have enough rubbing compound and you can cleanse the doors of perception, you will see reality as it is, which is infinite. And that's not from Blake, it's from me. Because there was no rubbing compound in the age of William Blake. There was no such thing as rubbing compound in those days. There were people who tried to use methods to rub the compound to clean up perception, but they got a little off track there. They really got off track when they started using psychedelic drugs. Because they were not really cleaning the doors of reality with the psychedelic drugs. What they were doing was making reality more opaque. But now it's sounding a little too philosophical and too correct, and I'm getting too close to the truth for my own sake and your own sake. So I think it's better that we pull back and go, certainly not to the issue of delegates, Cruz, Trump, etc. You're not going to hear those words out of me today. Brain dead. Brain dead. Delegates, 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 delegates. Why I tell you it's them delegates? It's them delegates, 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 delegates. It's not so delicate to talk about delegates. I'd rather talk about Delhi than talk about delegates. I'd rather talk about corned beef than to talk about... Yeah, you get the picture. Now, what do you want to talk about? All right, we're going back to the stuff, the religion stuff. MMA. Let's go to the MMA call. Douglas on KSFO. Because I said, should the MMA be outlawed because of the death of the fighter? And Douglas is calling me on KSFO streaming online, where this show dominates all of the shows in the nation. Go ahead, Douglas. What's on your mind?
I don't think it should be banned because there's been far more deaths in boxing over its 100-and-some-year history. There's been, according to the Manuel Velasquez Boxing Fatality Collection that I'm looking up on Wikipedia, 923 deaths from 1890 to 2007. And I think now we're up to six deaths in MMA since 2001.
But wait a minute, how many years? Wait, come on now. Let's be fair to the discussion. How many years has MMA been a sport?
Since the mid-90s, I believe. The first time I saw it was 1995.
No, many of us love watching it. I mean, there's no question about it. I've gone to the matches in Vegas. I sat in the second row, and I've enjoyed watching it. And most of the guys in the world of MMA don't get killed. The majority of them know how to protect themselves, and they may look hurt, but they're not. But I'm a little concerned about where the sport is going right now. I think it's getting to be more violent and more bloody.
It is a little bit, but they're also taking further precautions with drug testing as well, and now they're not allowing a lot of the fighters to take IV injections when they're doing weight cutting, which is more beneficial for those fighters not hurting themselves.
Yeah, well, let me ask you something about this, because I don't know anything about it other than watching it as an outside observer and knowing that I'd be killed if I was in the ring with an MMA fighter within a few seconds. We all know that. And are you yourself in that world of MMA?
No, but I watch it every event. I watch the UFC. I watch every event of the UFC. And
All right, fair enough. So do I. I enjoy watching it up to a point. I like to watch it when it's somewhat matched closely, and each guy is like just almost as good as the other guy. But when I see one guy almost killing the other guy, I got to turn the television off because I'm not watching it to see the other one man kill another. I got to tell you that.
Agreed. And there are some referees out there. I think Steve Mazzagatti is one of them that a lot of fighters and promoters do not like because he does not stop the fights when they need to be stopped. And I think more.
Oh, so that I wanted to ask you, this guy who just died in Ireland, it was an Irishman against some guy from Argentina. I watched it. I linked it up from the New York Post on michaelsavage.com. If you watch this tape, you can see the guy on the ground being pummeled repeatedly. He gets him on the ground, he links his serpentine left arm around his neck like a boa constrictor, and he starts beating his head, and I would say two punches would have been enough. I counted eight, and the guy died 3 days later.
Yeah, and there should be some accountability to held to the referee in that regards as well, and I don't think I can bring myself to watch that. I saw your link, and I just don't think I want to watch somebody die in the ring.
Well, that's why I'm talking about it. Maybe there needs to be some new rules for the referees in the MMA world, because we don't want blood in the ring and see someone beaten to death in a ring over and over again. It's not a bullfight, for God's sakes. But thank you for enlightening us with that call about the differential in referees. Certainly that would account for it, because this referee did not step in quickly enough. I mean, hindsight, of course, is perfect. Hindsight's, perfect. 20/20, as they all say. But he made a mistake. That's why the guy is dead. Anyhow, here we are. We're talking about so many different topics that there's no relationship, or is there? KSFO, Mario, welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
I would just like to say the role religion has had in my life throughout my years. You know, as a young man in my 20s, I turned to a whole lot of liberalism, even though my family, my grandparents brought me up in Christianity. When I was in my 20s, I decided I just wanted to be a full-blown liberal and serve myself and serve my wants and needs. And I always had a great work ethic, and I always felt myself to be a logical person. And so at one point, I dismissed Christianity. And as I got older, especially in recent years, I realized the logical path that Christianity has in my life and in this nation. You know, I've always been patriotic, and I feel that America has always been the light of the world, and it has been the light of the world because we are a Judeo-Christian society. Our morals, our laws are based on this, and the further we get away from it, the more we deteriorate into this Babylonian kind of culture. And, I grew up in Colorado. I've lived here in the Bay Area for 5 years, and whenever I go into San Francisco, I just see how it's just coming down, and how these people that consider themselves to be logical and consider themselves to be, you know, intellectually liberated are really, like you say, they're just slaves to their needs and to their...
Tell the audience what you see when you walk around San Francisco, man on the street. What do you... Give us an example of what you mean by the slavery of liberation.
Okay, first, you know, I get off the BART. I come from the East Bay, so I work in San Francisco. I get off the BART. When I go up the escalators, I can count at least 20 hypodermic needles, you know, littering the stairs as I go up with my bicycle. That with the accompanied by the smell of feces and urine. I get to...
Yeah, but that's considered roses to the supervisors of San Francisco. That's natural. That's a human natural smell in a liberal, progressive city. The smell of human waste is the mark of nature.
Sure. I guess to them.
And once you ask the mayor or the supervisor or Nancy Pelosi, it probably smells like roses to them because it's the mark of freedom for a bum to defecate on an escalator. You don't want to inhibit him.
Down on me.
You don't want to inhibit the junkie from shooting up in front of your child because that wouldn't be fair. That would create injustice in San Francisco. And I understand what you mean. And, of course, nobody seems to notice it but very few like yourself, right?
I think that, you know, the way you say it, they think that it's just part of, you know, people should serve what they want. If they emotionally think that they should be addicted to heroin and shoot up on the streets, that's what they should do, you know, and that these old traditional values that we have as America are archaic and they have no place in
it. That's right. Bring it all down, man. If it feels good, do it. Why not do it in the road? That's the ethos that built San Francisco, ding, ding.
You know, just living here day in, day out, you get used to it a little bit. You know, you kind of just let it roll off your back to some extent. It eats away at you a little bit. But then, you know, we just went to visit family in Colorado and even in Southern California. We went to Ventura County or Red County, and it's like, oh, my God, there are American flags flying. There's people that are polite to each other.
Can you imagine politeness and American flags? You better not talk about it on the show because the progressives are liable to go down there and immediately remove the flags. And get the thought police after the polite Christians that you know.
The things that people idolize here and worship here are just mind-blowing. It's just completely off the scale.
All right, so how do you navigate the sea of whatever you want to define it as. I don't need a single word. How do you navigate the seas of San Francisco?
You know, mostly I just keep to myself.
Bingo. That's right. Follow your own counsel. Let God be your guide. Let your family values be your guide, and don't worry about the next man.
That. And you know, just on the other topic, you're talking about MMA. You know, I'm a martial arts practitioner. I practice jiu-jitsu, which is one of
no wonder you sound like such a nice Christian guy because you can kill anyone who tries to mess with your guy. No wonder you can walk around with such equanimity. So tell me, go on. I'm sorry, continue.
The most respectful place that I spend is on the time and the mat with my fellow practitioners. Everybody is very respectful, very polite, and it's because of the fact that, you know, all of those people can rip your arms off at any point. But, you know, jiu-jitsu is kind of what really got MMA rolling, what got the UFC rolling with Royce Gracie, you know, 165-pound guy in a karate suit that was just tearing all these, you know, big, huge monsters apart. And it was a big part of the way MMA developed.
Wait, let me. You're saying? Did you say Gracie knew judo, and he then started to defeat bigger people through judo? Is that what you just said?
Through jiu-jitsu, Brazilian jiu-jitsu.
I see. And which is to the average listener, how does it differ from karate?
Jiu-jitsu is strictly a grappling art. It's basically taking judo to the next step, from getting the people on the ground. Once you're on the ground, controlling them and applying submission. The translation is the gentle art, but taken to its extreme, it can be very violent. It's choking, it's you know, dislocating joints, but it doesn't get taken that far because usually that's when you see people tapping out. They know what's coming next. So it's all about being able to control your opponent in that way.
Well, it's to know when to stop also, isn't it?
Absolutely, and it's crucial when you're practicing. You don't want to hurt your training partners. You don't want to be injured, so, you know, you take it up to that point, and then you lay off. And people that practice this know they're very tempered individuals. They're some of the nicest people I've ever met in my life, most respectful people.
I can imagine it's true. Genuinely tough people, genuinely lethal people are usually some of the nicest people in the world, as I've seen in my life. Very, very tough people are usually very, very good to be around. It's the other guys you got to watch out for. Hey, I got to send you a gift. You sound like a great guy. You know, you really sound like a nice person. I could see you walking into Bart with your bicycle, sidestepping the human feces, courtesy of the progressives, and not getting angry about it or violent about it, just living with it. Let me send you government. Would you rather have Government Zero or the Teddy Book?
Well, I'd love Government Zero, and I just want to say, when I found 5:60 a.m. here, I was like, thank God, a voice of reason in my daily life.
Well, I'm glad I could be that way for you a few hours a day. It's not easy, as my mother used to say. Trust me, it's not easy. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or Swiss America. All right, welcome back. So the show's coming to an end. And as I said, I got tired of the dives and the greasy spoons I normally eat in because I'm a downscale guy. I don't like fancy. But eventually, I got tired of it. So I did a suit and tie, went to a fancy restaurant. $42 for a filet mignon the size of a hamburger. Luckily, I don't eat meat much, so they did me a favor, okay? But I'm looking at another menu here. This is how the Mandarins eat every night. And here's, I'm giving you prices in San Francisco. You ask yourself, how do they pay this? I'm reading off filet mignon, 12 ounces, $52. Petit filet mignon, 8 ounces, $46. Porterhouse steak, 24 ounces, $58. Petite boneless New York, 47. Bone-in ribeye, $53. Kobe-style Australian Kobe, $85. American Wagyu New York, $85. But wait, if you really want to, let's say you're Nancy Pelosi or Dianne Feinstein after a hard day at the factory. Authentic Japanese Kobe ribeye, $195. I mean, that's what you need if you're Obama, working for the humble poor. Or let's say you really don't want to splurge, you only want a roast prime rib of beef. It's only $52. Of course, potatoes and everything else are extra. How about some lamb chops? Three lamb chops, $49. So this is what I'm talking about. Now you know how the Mandarins live. And now you know why I generally don't put on a suit and tie. And why I eat out of boxes or go to dives. This is the Savage Nation. Be here.